All right. Arjan, I guess one of the projects you're probably most known for in the past couple of years is the PowerTop utility, which I found very fascinating. I mean, looking at some of the gains you've made over the past 18 months there, it seems like Linux-based devices are saving a lot more power than they used to be. What do you consider the big successes in the past year and a half?
To be honest, we fixed effectively the entire Linux desktop space. So it's not PowerTop is more. It's not just what we fixed with PowerTop is not individual pieces. It's we fixed everything. For me, that was a success.
You're seeing everything in terms of not just desktop but server side as well.
Yeah, it's we fixed not just Evolution. We fixed Firefox. The thing with PowerTop was that it wasn't one thing that was broken. Everything had problems, and we had to fix all of it. So for me, the success was how quickly everything got fixed. That was just amazing.
In this context, do you consider fixed everything is no longer broken in the same way? Or
so everything is no longer keeping a CPU out of idle, basically.
Okay. Do you have a reference machine you're saying that... I guess I'm asking, what's your benchmark for this? A particular software configuration stack or a particular type of machine? Or are you willing to say it's pretty much every Linux-based machine out there?
I'm looking at several machines. My own laptop is, but to be honest, what runs on my own laptop is what I care about most.
Right.
At least that's where I got more battery life. This is where I see the changes. And I tend to run a quite rich environment on my laptop. But I also look at servers. We look at all kinds of machines. And we see the same trend everywhere, in that all the various pieces that were pulling or keeping the CPU up, they all got fixed.
In fixing this, is there a component of education, for example, saying instead of doing a busy wait on a select loop or continually polling, you should set a kernel timer and wait for that to call you?
That's part of it, but the biggest thing is that you now have visibility. I spoke, like, just 2 days ago at IDF, I spoke with a developer on the GNOME desktop, and he said, yeah, when I saw it happen, I fixed it in 10 minutes. But you don't know it's there until you see it with Black PowerTop. So the adding the visibility turns out to be enough for people to start fixing it. They know how to fix, how to not poll most of the time.
You can't fix something you can't measure.
If you don't see that it happens, you don't know it happens, and you can't fix it.
Are you getting the same sort of results from other projects you run into?
GNOME was there, but almost everybody goes, oh yeah, whoops, we should have not done that. Either they fix it themselves or some other people give them a fix, and in general it's like, oh yeah, we shouldn't have done that. It's unless you see what's happening, you don't know what to fix, right? So the biggest thing that PowerTop did was add visibility. We can see under the hood what's going on, and then we can fix it. And quite often, the fix is very simple.
It sounds then, maybe I should be able to say that just about everybody's happy to see this. Is that the case?
Yes. All of the developers I've worked with, and that's quite a few, they all go, oh yeah, thanks for the fix. We should have not done this in the first place. We didn't know this. We'll fix it. It's fixed now. Or in the beginning, I did most of the fixing when the PowerTop was very new. And nowadays, people do it themselves. Developers run this while they're developing. So I don't even have, it's at a point where I don't have to fix stuff anymore. Everybody is using it, and they fix it for me. That's not the right way to say it, but they fix their own technology.
Right. Instead of you saying, here is a problem in software someone else wrote, here's my suggestion how to fix it, that knowledge is now in the community, and people can fix their own stuff before they even release it.
Exactly. So I don't have to chase them. They pay attention to it from the start, which is, of course, the right way.
That sounds good. Do you know if any proprietary software users are doing the same thing? Proprietary software developers are doing the same thing?
I don't know. I don't see their source code.
Right.
I suspect some of them do, and I know some of them don't. The components that are left as known problematic are those proprietary components.
As usual when talking about the Linux kernel, right?
Not just kernel. A lot of it is user space. And I don't want to single people out here. That's not so nice. But the pieces that are problematic tends to be the proprietary one, because I can't fix them, right? So we can't fix them. So, but some of them got fixed, some of them didn't. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that definitely makes sense, absolutely.
But even those guys are sometimes looking at it.
Right, I was just kind of curious if you'd had traffic on the mailing list or patches come in or features from them.
What I see kind of is, how to put it, users go to their proprietary vendor and yell at them. So users run PowerTop and put pressure on whoever gave them the source to fix it, or give them binary to fix it.
Because it's visible now, oh, this Oracle client is waking up my kernel 100 times a second, and I don't like that.
Yep.
I see.
So PowerTop is not just for developers, it's also for users. And the users will pressure their software vendor.
Right. I use primarily GNU Linux-based desktop applications, I know you do as well. But a lot of the software we're talking about, GNOME, Firefox, these are cross-platform applications. I'm wondering, do these fixes affect other platforms positively, negatively, no effect?
In general, positively. Most of the stuff you find is just bad programming. But in fact, the fix usually also improves performance, because if you pull the system all the time, you consume CPU power. Not just power, but also CPU cycles. And by fixing it, you stop consuming cycles, so they're available for something else. And that's independent of what OS you're. For Firefox, that applies to everything, all the OSs, right? Even if you wouldn't care about power, you still save CPU cycles. Not always a lot, but still, it adds up. Because you schedule, you do a context switch, you official TLBs, just to do nothing. And it does add up. I don't have numbers for other operating systems that, but conceptually, it's an improvement.
Right. I was thinking about specific polling interfaces, kpoll, epoll, for example, differences between BSDs and Linux.
Polling speed isn't a problem so much. Those guys are, apoll, kpoll are all tricks to make high, how to put it, to deal with high frequency events and then deal with this efficiently, like a web server. The polling we're talking about here is that the application just keeps asking, is there anything yet? Is there anything yet? So it's kind of orthogonal to those guys. Any polling loop in user applications, no matter what actual polling mechanism is used, that's sort of independent of that.
Okay.
Just that the fact that they look every 10 milliseconds to see if something happened, that's what hurts, not what mechanism is used.
Okay. Did you get more response from users or from Linux distributions or application developers?
A lot of users were helping, because if you give people more battery life, that's what people care about a lot. And distributions also use it because they compete almost on battery life. They compete on usability, and battery life is just part of usability. That's the thing that PowerTop achieves as well, is put that more on the radar, that software matters for battery life. That does, if you don't fix it, you consume battery life, and there's a difference between OS vendors. I know Fedora used to sort of, they were sort of the head runner in this. So for a while, Fedora used less power than the other guys. So it's for them, it's a way to sort of at least not go behind the other guys, to the other people.
And in that case, Fedora might be willing to apply a patch to Pigeon or to Firefox to consume fewer resources, even if that patch isn't necessarily an upstream yet.
Quite often the patches were upstream. It's just a matter of pulling them, backporting them to whatever they had.
Right, right. Well, I know I had certain frustrations with my laptop in particular. I didn't have the Force HPET patch, which I really, really wanted. I was kind of waiting for upstream to get that out.
Some of the patches took a little bit longer, but in a 3 to 6 month time window, pretty much everything, all the important pieces fell into place. But yeah, Force HPET was a painful one, because it's basically using hard... It had to go to the kernel, and it's using hardware in a way that's not really meant to be used. A lot of we work around BIOS issues and stuff, so it took a while to stabilize that. But I have to say, some of the distros were very good about staying on top of the latest pieces. Others took a bit more time. But that's okay. Some of them, distros, thankfully, we have diversity in Linux, right?
And again, if users are pushing on this, very little prevents a user from compiling a custom kernel or building his or her own version of Firefox.
Or pushing his distro to do it anyway.
Exactly. Or even contributing third-party packages to other users.
The good news, it's almost quiet now, because everybody knows it's sort of almost last year stuff, right? Most of the stuff is fixed. People keep track of that it doesn't get worse. I run PowerTop every other week or so, just to see that we didn't go backwards. So we are adding, once in a while, we add new tricks to PowerTop, but on the software side, we fix most of the it was very, very fast, like 3 to 6 months, and most of it was fixed.
Right, right. It seems like all the releases that came out this year, the new distribution releases, are so much better than last year's. It's amazing.
Yes, they are.
Do you consider this mostly a finished product then, or finished project?
We are looking at expanding it a little bit, but the software, the wake-ups part of it is, I think, finished. And now it's a matter of making sure we don't go back. The second thing we're trying to do with PowerTop is, towards the future, is making it a sort of a check tool. So we have a mode that we can run on a system and says, okay, you have this feature. Oops, you missed this part. This is where you can add, look up here what you want to do, and then you can tune further. Make it a very specific for like system integrators. They can run a checklist to see if anything is missing. And if anything is missing, it should will give information of how to fix it. It's almost like it becomes a QA tool rather than a developer tool.
It's just a way to profile your code along another dimension.
Yeah, and make it more suitable for validation teams, basically. Right? We started for the developers. Now that everything is fixed, we have to have the QA team run it. Think of it that way.
And you can say, okay, in this past week, we've gone from one wake-up per second to 10 wake-ups per second. Let's trace it back to whichever patch did that.
Yep, and also, and this tunable, we're now no longer setting the right way. Or we have this driver, and we have the old version of the driver. We should have had a new version. The focus is shifting a little bit, but I think that's a good thing. It means that a lot of the stuff is done, and we just have to sustain it and make it something that QA teams can use.
Then it's not the case that you've solved the easy parts and the hard parts are remaining.
Yeah, correct. I think we solved most of the pieces.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about latency, Topsy, because I've seen that come out recently, for various values of recently, and it seems like that's a more interesting product in terms of latency is a little harder to understand because there are so many more moving parts.
Yeah, and it's also a different focus. Well, PowerTop was very focused on users as well. Latency top is very, very much on developer, which makes the audience a lot smaller.
Is the motivation, I've seen for years and years and years, the low latency patch set aimed at people who are doing media development, audio development with the Linux kernel. I know that that's a concern, but are there other projects or other focuses?
Well, there's different types of latency. And everybody knew how the low latency patches worked. The problem with them, with those patches, is they show latency for when the other CPU is running, right? Process A is running, and the time between that and when process B gets to run, that's the latency that the low latency patches touch. But latency top tries to attack sort of a complement to that. It is the time that the process is not running, but waiting for something. We didn't have tools to measure that part. We had tools to measure the other part. And the low latency guys, Ingo, went all the way, right? The real-time patch is basically the ultimate low latency patch. But it's only for when the CPU is running. But that's only half the story. If I look at my desktop, all the stutters and what people think is a latency problem are not when the CPU is busy, because my CPU, I have a fast 10-run CPU on my laptop. It's when my disk is doing something, or I'm waiting for a lock, or I'm waiting for DNS or something.
But you're not CPU bound, in other words.
I'm not CPU bound at all. And I'm still having stutters. I still have what you would call latency problem. The visibility in what's going on was missing for me. My laptop was stuttering. I have a pretty fancy laptop lately. I bought a new one a few months ago. Fast CPU, lots of memory, nice screen. And once in a while, it's just slow. And I wanted to know why it's slow, right? I see my disk light going or something like that, but I don't see what is going on. That's what inspired me to make latency top, to see what's going on. Why are we waiting? What are we waiting on? Who's waiting? What's it doing when it's waiting, right? That sort of questions. Latency top is designed for that question. So what's my application doing that causes my system to be to sort of stutter? And it's not about, and that's the misconception a lot of people have about preemption and about real time. It doesn't help for this because you're not busy in the CPU. In fact, Linux, even without preemption and without real time patches for the desktop, is more than good enough, because the latencies that Linux has, even without those patches, are so small, it doesn't matter in the CPU side. But if you're on the non CPU use case, that's where you hit the problem.
And that's what you were not able to measure until latency.
That's why I wanted to see what's going on my system.
Mm-hmm.
Who is waiting? What is doing when it's waiting? And the next step then is, okay, can we fix that? That's for the developers.
Were there specific patches in the kernel or developments in the kernel that you needed to be able to trace these things, like the tickless kernel for PowerTop?
There's a very small patch to the kernel for latency top. But it's in the mainline kernel since 2.6.25, I think, or maybe 24. It's been a while. It's a very small patch. That gives me the information I have that basically I need to expose the information that the new CFS scheduler collects. The new CFS scheduler collects has the infrastructure to collect the data. It just needed to sort of measure it and expose it. And that was, I wrote a patch for that, and then I wrote the tools for that, to use it.
You make it sound so easy. Have you started seeing results from that as well?
A little bit. People use it for diagnostics mostly. I'm going to be using it in the next probably 6 to 12 months just to nail down some of the issues in the I/O scheduler. Because it has shown me at least that I/O scheduler needs a bit of work. CFQ at Jens Expo Road is very nice, but there is other pieces of the I/O stack that actually are not working well yet. There's a glass jaw in there that sort of everything works fine, and at some point you hit the wall and everything collapses.
I've noticed that as well when I do a large parallel make, for example.
Yep.
Up to about 9 processes on a dual processor box is fine, but beyond that, it just gets bogged down in disk I/O.
It's not that it goes that you're into a limit of the hardware, but somehow it degrades at some point. And I'm seeing it on my laptop already. At some point, if my mail client starts writing out the mail, it just stops for a second. And there is some bottleneck that I want to chase down.
Do you think that's mostly at the kernel level, or?
I think that one is the kernel level.
That sounds more difficult to me in some ways to change than teaching people how not to write bugs in their applications.
I'm mostly kernel developer, so I know how to fix bugs.
Well, sure, and you have probably more access to fix it in one spot than if it were in hundreds of spots and hundreds of applications.
Yeah, I suspect it's only one or two places I have to fix something. So in a way, that's easy compared to what we had to do with PowerTool.
Right. Do you think there are also latency problems in applications? Or
it's not so much that as it is that applications do things that make the kernel do expensive latency things.
Is that because the kernel is mostly tuned for a specific type of workload and does?
Well, no, the kernel does what application asks, right? If the application asks, send your entire cache to disk, the kernel will be happy to do that. But the application will not have to wait for my 4 gigabytes of data to hit my SATA disk. So the application then stops. So we might have to fix applications to not do that sort of thing.
Like the F-sync bug in Firefox, for example.
Exactly. That would have latency top will point that out. I actually saw that happen with Firefox, the latency top. RPM, the RPM program has the same problem. If you're doing an upgrade, you're on latency top, it's going to be F-sync. So that's kind of things we can use latency top for to nail down and at least see what happens. Fixing it is sometimes harder. The PowerTop things were easy to fix. Some of the latency top things are going to be harder to fix.
Do you think then that there's not one specific type of error pattern like there is that you see with PowerTop?
Yeah, it's more of a, for example, the Firefox F-sync problem. They really wanted F-sync. While for PowerTop, the people didn't want to pull, just was the easiest lazy way to do it temporarily and fix it later. They never got around to it.
Right, and no one ever said, this is a problem, so let's fix it.
They coded it, they made a quick implementation, went on, and never got back to it. The Firefox one, people really wanted F-sync, except that it was the effect of it was bad. But conceptually, it's not a bad, stupid thing to do. It just takes a while. So it's a harder type of bug because you have to re-architect your system to not need F-sync.
Is that the type of bug where it's not a problem if your hard disk size is 30 or 40 megabytes, but when your hard disk size is 80 or 100 or 250 gigabytes, then it's more of a problem?
It scales more with the number of the amount of applications running, the sort of the size of that desktop. 5-10 years ago, there was only one application. It was a lot simpler. Complexity of the running desktop is getting a lot bigger, which means there's more I/O, there's more stuff in progress. And F-sync is basically the enormous glass jaw. Everything has to go to a little straw during that. And the more the straw is the same size as 10 years ago, except there's just so much more going on.
That's interesting because it reminds me in some way of what I think I heard was Ted Cho say a couple years ago, where he said, Fisk is dead because hard disks are too large?
The good news is that there's SSDs, solid state, and Intel announced a few at IDF 2 days ago. They solve some of this because they're just an order faster. Well, it's not solving. They hide it for a bit longer.
Exactly.
Let's put it that way.
Yeah, just delaying the problem.
With latency top, you can at least see the problems and fix them. They'll still be there with SSDs, just you only hit them 3 years later again.
Right. You cut in half. You don't make it to... You don't... You, the algorithm.
You sort of... Instead of 100 milliseconds, you go to 5 milliseconds, and you don't perceive it as much, but it's still there. It scales with the size of the application, so 3 years from now, when a desktop is even bigger, more things are going on, you still hit the wall, I think. I'm looking in the future is hard, of course.
Oh, of course, but that makes sense to me as well. That's what I would expect.
So fixing things now, fixing things like that async, we have to just do. Some of it, again, some of it is kernel level, but some of the app stuff we just have to fix. And Firefox got kind of fixed. RPM still needs fixing, and there's a few others like that. But this is the kind of thing that we can find with latency tool.
Are you having as much success as you did with PowerTop, or in some ways it's a little more difficult?
It's a lot smaller audience, and it's a lot harder to fix things. In terms of success, it's a lot less. And if you measure success by the number of people using it, it's a lot less, because the audience, by definition, is a lot smaller. And I never intended LatencyTop to be as big as PowerTop, because it's really for a few developers who need to nail down a complex problem. Like the Firefox one, I don't think they used LatencyTop. They should have, because then it would have been immediately obvious.
I think the person who found it did, if I remember the LWN discussion correctly.
Could have been. I don't remember exactly.
I don't remember.
But that's the kind of thing it's for. It's more a targeted tool.
Once you see you're having a problem, use this tool to figure out where it is.
Yes. And everybody has a power problem.
And this is just something that, I guess, Intel pays you to sit around and think up interesting things to do, and you do them.
That's part of my job. I do a whole bunch of things.
Are you looking at other measurement profiling tools for other things? Disk.io, I guess LatencyTop kind of gets in there. But
yeah. So one of the things I did recently was kernel-oops.org. is a measurement for the quality of the kernel, not the behavior of the kernel. Tracking kernel oopses, making them, finding out which crashes are popular so that we can improve the quality of the kernel. That's one thing I've been doing the last few months. And going forward, I'm working on boot time right now.
Which I'd love to see improve.
At the Plumas conference in September, I'll be showing with some of my coworkers a netbook booting in 5 seconds to full UI.
I might just catch that talk then.
I'm not going to tell you how I'm doing that yet. That's for the Plumas conference.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll be talking about a 5-second boot there, and I'll show people.
Is this on commodity hardware?
This is on a netbook, a standard ASUS AEPC.
Right, kind of okay, yeah.
We have it working. We boot in 5 seconds.
I think the OpenMoco folks would want to see that as well.
I'm already getting a lot of people saying, can you just give a sneak peek? Well, Plumas as well, we'll present. I don't want to, how to put it, you know how that goes.
Exactly. You guys can wait a month.
You can wait a few weeks. We will want to make Plumas. I don't want, come to Plumas if you want to see it. That's when I give the presentation. That's where we launched it. That's what I'm doing now. And yes, you're right. I want to see it improve everywhere. If you read the abstract of my talk at Plumas, I do not accept that it should take a minute to boot my laptop.
Right.
I have a really fast laptop with lots of memory. It shouldn't be take a minute. I'll accept 5 seconds.
Yeah.
I do not want to accept more than 5 seconds.
Right. There's no reason you should have to go get a cup of coffee or tea every time you want to resume from Hibernate or whatever.
Or just boot.
Yeah, exactly.
So we do not accept that it takes more than 5 seconds, and then we started making that happen. The netbooks are nice because they have a small SSD. That solves some of the problems but causes other ones. 5 seconds for me was like, this should not take more than 5 seconds. And it doesn't if you actually work on it. There's one downside to that kind of thing. My normal laptop now feels really slow. There's this fast pen on the CPU. It's 4 gigabytes of memory. It's about 3 months old or something like that. It feels slow compared to the netbook because it boots in a minute.
Wow.
So one of the things I'm going to do next is also port that technology to my laptop.
And that'll help it spread to more people.
I'm hoping to achieve with my Plumas presentation that distribution vendors will start working on it. Actually, take it seriously.
I have some suspicions of things you can do, but mine are probably just cut the boot time in half, not get it down to 5 seconds.
That's the thing. A lot of people spend time on this and said, well, we make it go faster. Let's do parallel stuff, or let's make do this or that.
Or let's reduce the number of stats you have to do to initialize the system, or something like that.
What we found is that then they go from like 50 seconds to 45 seconds. Great. Good progress. I want to be at 5, right?
Yeah.
It's a mindset thing almost. I want to be at 5. I am at 5 right now, so I'm happy about that, but that's, for me, the next step in making Linux more usable. Boot in 5, maybe 10 seconds. If you don't have an SSD, it's going to take a little bit longer, but it shouldn't be a minute. It shouldn't be 20 seconds. It should be 5. And I should say that's something that people really, it bugs me, let's put it that way.
Well, yeah.
I hate how my laptop boot takes a minute to boot.
I think also if people notice that their boot time can get cut to, you know, 20, even 20% of what it is right now, they'll start noticing.
Let's put it this way. I'll switch to distros. I'll switch distros right away if someone else has 5 seconds. What I use doesn't. As for me, that's a reason to switch to whatever distro has 5 seconds.
Right.
in my lab.
Right.
Even more than power, almost.
Really?
Power is important. We fixed that last year.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and still, but power is, everybody has now its own power. For me, boot time is next.
Right.
If one distro takes a minute and the other one takes 5 seconds, guess which I'll pick.
And that's a compelling reason for you to switch.
That is important enough for me to switch. If it's 7 to 5, different story. From a minute to 5 seconds, I'll switch. It's one of those things that make the machine usable. Because I don't want to go into the office 10 minutes early so that I can, before the meeting, so that I can the phone number to call after 10 minutes.
Or fiddle with a projector for 5 minutes. Or
yeah, there's a bunch of things. If I have a meeting at 8 a.m., I want to be in the office 7:59.
Mm-hmm.
Because those 10 minutes, I can sleep longer, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Or I can do other things. That sort of thing is like, if I have to wait 10 minutes, just sitting there waiting for my phone number to come up so that I can call the meeting, that's irritating, right?
Or you're on the Mac, you're in an airplane, you have a great idea, you pull open your laptop.
And you wait 10 minutes.
10 seconds, you can be typing your idea or
yep.
Waiting a minute. Yeah, that's a compelling idea.
Or I'm somewhere, I want to look something up on the internet. If that takes 5 seconds, I can look it up right away.
Right.
If it takes 10 minutes, 5 minutes, 2 minutes.
It's going to have to be really something you want to look up.
I don't even... half the time I wouldn't bother, right?
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Because it's going to be minutes, yeah, never mind.
In terms of maybe desktop side, from people who aren't developers like me or aren't kernel developers like you, what do you consider the next steps in making the free desktop more usable for everyone?
So for me, boot time is one. Suspend resume to RAM working very reliable is the other one. Other than that, we're not doing bad. If you look at what Acer or Asus or those guys put into netbooks, that is really slick, and anybody can use it. So it's not a application usability problem anymore. 5 years ago, we said nobody has applications, it's hard to use. Oh, that's solved. If you look at Asus, Acer, all the netbook guys, there's no problems there. They're not perfect, but for me, things like boot time, like power, like suspend resume, there's still a bunch of work to be done there. UI usability, that's moving so fast. If I mention that a year from now, people will laugh and say, yeah, we solved that. There's a few changes happening. The netbooks are different, right, than laptops.
And that's an important point, because we're talking about sort of a new market that didn't exist 2 years ago.
Yep, screens are smaller. Some of them may or may not have touch screens. If I look at the news announcements, some of the usage is going to be different. If you have a touch screen, or like a netbook or a Mate, they have touch screens. Some of them do. The touch paradigm will change a lot of applications. I'm not going to say iPhone, but if you look at traditional phone versus iPhone, touch changes the rule.
Especially multi-touch.
Multi-touch specifically. That touch and multi-touch is just doing touch right. That's changing the entire interaction paradigm. So I think the next year or two, we'll see a lot of development around the new interaction paradigm. And speech could be one of the other ones in terms of interaction paradigm.
Well, now we're predicting the future we've been predicting for 20 years, right?
I'm not someone who looks at tea leaves and says this will happen.
Right, exactly.
But if you look at where the next frontier is, I suspect it's the interaction paradigm.
And I guess that's a question for Keith, who's sitting right next to you, right?
Well, it's one row over. No, but it's access to half of it, but only half. The other half is how you, at the application level, right? How do you deal with not having a keyboard or using a keyboard as little as you can and getting the most out of touch? Infrastructure, but also application. And I'm not sure I'm going to be involved in that as much, but that's where I think a lot of the next steps are.
The idea of taking away my keyboard scares me, too.
I think there's always going to be a keyboard.
Well, yeah, we have to write software, right?
It's not just that. It's also the fastest way to get more than a few characters into the computer.
Mm-hmm.
Even my cell phone has a keyboard. Anybody's BlackBerry will have a keyboard. People who text on the low-end consumer phones with the hit 5-3 times to get an E, that doesn't work. Cell phones are getting keyboards. So for some applications, keyboard is the right thing. If you enter a bunch of text, even text messages or emails, keyboard is probably the right thing. For other things, like media playback, if I want to hit my media player and just start playing, probably not. Web browsing, most of it is not typing stuff. I want to be able to type stuff if I have to, but not otherwise. We'll see. There's going to be a lot of research, a lot of experimentation, a lot of development. Some of it will succeed, some of it will fail.
That's why we have an open development process, right?
It's evolutionary.
Exactly.
The strong guys, the good stuff survives.
We hope, anyway.
Mostly does. If it's really good, it survives.
Yes, yes.
If it's only 5% better, maybe not, but if it's 5 times better, it'll survive.
Yeah, 5 times better, people notice. Well, Arjan, that's my list of questions. Is there anything I didn't cover you really want to let us know about?
Not really, just come to Plymouth. Watch my presentation.
Is registration still open? Because it looked like it was getting pretty full.
I don't know exactly. I'm a speaker, so I just get registered that way.